Online later today at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
The music playing is Interstellar Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio, and I'm your host, Andre Middleton. Today, my guests are Mia Firm and Heather Lane from Cinema Project. But first up, some local art news. Attention, due November 10th, 2016 William H. Johnson Prize. The William H. Johnson Prize is awarded annually to early career African-American artists. For their purposes, early career is a flexible term that should be interpreted liberally to include artists who have finished their academic work within 12 years from the year that the prize is awarded. Age is not determinant, and artists who have not earned BFAs or MFAs are still eligible as long as they have not been working as a professional artist for 12 years or more. You can find a link on our show page for more information. The William H. Johnson Foundation for the Arts is a nonprofit tax-exempt organization that seeks to encourage African-American artists early in their careers by offering financial grants. The Johnson Foundation awards grants to individuals whose work in the following media: painting, photography, sculpture, printmaking, installation, and or new genres. This prize is worth $25,000, and the winner will be announced in December 2016. So please get on it. Saturday, November 12th, the NAACP Black Legacy Project has the honor of the historic role of African Americans in Portland who promotes the arts, culture, and history of their community in the first half of the 20th century as a way to break down racial stereotypes and racial segregation. Join them as they celebrate five local African-American artists who will be exhibiting and selling their artwork at the Billy Webb Elks Lodge on Saturday, November 12th. Doors open at 5:30 with the Meet the Artist open exhibit. Official programming starts at 7:30, followed by music from the Sounds of Jefferson, Jefferson's High School's historic funk band. And it's free. On November 13th, in Dialogue at the Portland Art Museum, it's an occasional series of interdisciplinary discussions-based seminars that explore art on view at the Portland Art Museum in relation to work in the humanities, social sciences, and sciences. This fall, they will investigate power and identity through special exhibitions by Josh Klein and RV Smith. Klein's Freedom examines politicians, protest movements, and surveillance tactics in our digital age. RV Smith explores African-American experiences of injustice and the will to resist. Using essays by Ralph Ellison and Sandy Alexandra, this seminar examines how race shapes our vision. They will discuss the gaze and looking as radicalized practices that reveal and distort how we see and navigate American society. Once again, links to that information is also on our show page. Well, Cinema Project is a collectively run nonprofit organization based in Portland, Oregon, that works to promote public awareness of avant-garde cinema from the past and the present. Featuring artists, curators, and scholars from around the world, their semi-annual series of screenings, lectures, and discussions function to broaden public engagement with and deepen critical understanding of innovative experimental film and video art. Today, I am thrilled to have join us Heather and Mia. It's great. It's so wonderful to have you here on Art Focus.
Thank you, Andre.
Thank you for coming here once again. So let me start off with what was the catalyst and inspiration that got Cinema Project started?
Well, neither Mia nor I are founders of Cinema Project, but it started in 2003, and Jeremy Rawson, Pablo de Ocampo, and Autumn Campbell started it, and they broke off from another film collective called Four Wall Cinema Collective.
Okay.
And I think that the idea was that there was nothing in Portland that served this specific function of, it's not a festival, it's not work by a whole bunch of people shown all at once with maybe no sense to the programming, or not no sense to the programming, but a contest or something. It's more what they did at first, which we have broken a little bit away from, is bringing an artist, not a regional artist, but someone from outside the region and outside the country, bringing them to Portland and showing a large body of their work over two nights so that the audience can interact with the filmmaker and a meaningful dialogue can happen.
Well, thank you. No, that sounds like it was a time well spent. It sounds like that's been a project that's been ongoing and it's had a real impact. So Mia, if you don't mind me asking you, what brought you to the collective?
Sure. So I moved to Portland in in the summer of 2008, and I was coming from New York. I had just finished my master's degree at NYU in cinema studies and had been an intern at Anthology Film Archive out there, which is a great place if you're interested in experimental film and avant-garde film. And I asked the folks at Anthology what was going on in Portland, and they said, the first thing they said was Cinema Project. So I got in touch with Autumn Campbell and Jeremy Rawson here to see what was going on, and I just kind of hit the ground running. And I would say that a big part of my understanding of experimental film has really come from my experience with Cinema Project, more so than the actual 2 years I spent in graduate studies.
Nice. So since this project is about the cinema, can either of you, one of you, tell me what are some of the screenings that have been meaningful for you or that have been impactful for you over the course of your participation in this collective?
Well, I'll tell you, before I was a part of Cinema Project, before I started helping out, I went to a screening, and I'm not even sure if I can remember the filmmaker's name, but I think it was Alan Ross, and it was called The Grandfather Trilogy. And he was a man who maybe had moved back in with his grandfather to get off drugs, and his grandfather was deeply religious, and he was filming his grandfather reading to him out of the Bible, filming his grandfather's house. He filmed his grandfather's funeral. And then he died in a very mysterious way. He was found in an attic. His body was found inside of the wall of a house or something.
Is this Mr. Ross or his grandfather?
This is Mr. Ross.
Okay.
And so for the screening, I moved here from Idaho. I had no idea what experimental film really was. I just started going to Cinema Project because I liked their posters, and then I just was blown away. And this is one of the screenings that completely blew me away, because they found his brother, who happened to live in the Portland area and who was not an artist. And he was very nervous, and he was pacing the front of this small art gallery where they screened then, and talking about how now he can't see a shadow on a wall without thinking of his brother, because to him it was just a shadow on a wall, but to his brother it meant something. And it was so important for this man to see this audience of people who were very unlike him talking about his brother's work, and the films were amazing.
Wow.
So that was a screening that has never left me, and I just kept going back.
Sure. For me, there was a recent screening that we did last year, actually, with a young woman named Nazlı Dançel, and she is U.S., Turkish, Swiss, so an international young lady who works a lot with 16-millimeter film. And because Cinema Project has such a commitment to format, we always try to show work on the format that the artist intended. We were really excited to bring her, because what she does with 16-millimeter film is highly personal and pretty political as well. And how she manipulates the film stock is also really interesting. So what she'll do is actually type onto film. She'll do a lot of scratching on the film. She will often sew on the film as well. And it's a way for her to express this idea of the film as a sort of body or a material that you can work with. And it was wonderful to hear her speak and to see her films. And I think having that context with the artist present is really important, especially when you're trying to unpack some really interesting themes and highly topical work. So, of course, we showed her work on 16-millimeter, which we often do, and we just had a really wonderful time speaking with her and watching her work.
Now, I have to let the audience know that I did come prepared with a variety of questions, but this conversation is eliciting new questions, so we're going to go off script here a little bit. What has been, in your opinion, the impact of having non-European white male voices added to the canon of avant-garde film?
That's a great question. Yeah, I think that's really important, because when we think about the history of avant-garde cinema, we're thinking about Stan Brakhage, Peter Hutton, Jonas Mekas, all amazing filmmakers who were real pioneers. But at the same time, I think when I think about work like Nosley's that we showed last spring, it's really coming from a new tradition, even though it's using similar techniques as someone like Stan Brakhage might use in terms of manipulating film stock. It's really important.
And we've always seen that as part of our mission, to look for work that isn't being shown. And of course, we sometimes have historic screenings where we look back at some of the great masters of American avant-garde, but we're always trying to look for what isn't being shown.
Right. Well, speaking of screenings, you have a screening coming up this Friday. Can you tell us more about that? Where it's happening, what's it going to be of, and what was the catalyst of that?
So it's the second in a series of screenings that we're calling Black Cinema. And the title is A Deep Responsibility to Live Up To, which comes from one of the films, The Interview with Angela Davis. She says that in the interview. So we're showing this strange film, Angela Davis at Malcolm X College. No one knows why it was made. Someone does, but it just got turned into the Chicago Film Archive with someone's collection of films. It may have only been seen at the Chicago Film Archives. They don't know if it was ever shown before that. We're showing a digital copy of that because there's only one film copy that exists, and so they won't rent it out, but we we used our money to make a really nice digital copy of it that will be available to other organizations.
Great.
And then we're also showing Malcolm X Speaks, which was made in 1971, so 5 or 6 years after Malcolm X died. And it was made by Gil Noble, who is this amazing newscaster who, since seeing this film, I have tried to learn more about. And I just read a book that he wrote called Black is the Color of My TV Tube. And really wonderful ideas and a real insight into media and its exclusions and inclusions.
It's interesting because I was lucky enough to attend like a preview screening of Malcolm X Speaks, and I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and I remember I'm getting close to 50, so I'm going to age myself here, but I remember watching Gil Noble's program called Like It Is on Channel 7 ABC News on Sunday mornings. I mean, it had a space alongside the Meet the Presses and the McNeil Lehrer Report, but it was such a time travel moment for me. And that brings me back to another question in regards to, and I know we're going to be all over the place, but it occurred to me that when you mentioned about the, you know, showing or displaying the films in the format that was intended, how is that changing now? I mean, you know, 16 millimeter film, it doesn't last forever unless it's been taken care of and it's archived and it's cherished. Is there a big movement to transfer things to a digital medium so that they can last longer, or does that in a weird way undermine the longevity because then it's all dots and zero, you know, ones and zeros on a server somewhere?
Yeah, I think it's really a mix of things. There is that tendency for when a film gets transferred to a digital exhibition copy that the print itself just sort of wanders away and is hidden within an archive. But I think that there are a lot of people who are also very committed to making sure that there's exhibition quality prints that can still be circulated. So you have people, labs like Color Lab, working with places like Academy Film Archives or Anthology Film Archives that are really trying to make things continue to be accessible. But then there's also the playback. So not everybody has a 16 millimeter projector. And you still want to make these things high quality so that people are seeing the best representation possible. But you also want to make sure that they're accessible as well.
Now, I'm going back and forth because this is such an exciting topic. But I reached out to someone within the community to ask them to help promote this event that's happening on Friday. And he expressed concern over the legitimacy of the Malcolm X Speaks. And you both have seen it. And even though you may not be from the Nation of Islam, can you speak to your interpretation of its authenticity regarding it being propaganda or not?
I'm not prepared for that question, but I'll try to wing it. What's interesting is that Gil Noble made that film, and what I find special about that film is that it was made by a black film crew. And when he was looking through the archive at, is it ABC?
Yes.
Was he at WABC? Before Malcolm X died, he wasn't interested in Malcolm X's politics, Gil Noble. And it was only after he heard a complete speech of Malcolm X's on tape, and not just the excerpts that the media, which was, you know, almost entirely white
run, right.
was playing. And that's when he realized that Malcolm X did have things that Gil Noble felt were really important, and he became just such a champion of Malcolm X after that. And he found all of, so the footage is footage that he found that wasn't played on the media. And so, but the interesting thing is that he then made another film, because I think he had questions about the first one, and I haven't seen the second one. But I'm very curious about it because he talks about it in the book. And part of it was that someone else was listed as a producer on Malcolm X Speaks when Gil Noble was the producer. And so any money that was made, because that film got put into high schools and, right. You know, an educational circuit. And Gil Noble didn't see any of that money because a different person was listed as a producer and it was never corrected.
Right. Right, right. Well, I have to say also, upon seeing it, I was also struck through at the lens of time and how, you know, Gil Noble in the station that he was with the license that he had at such a tumultuous era had a voice that I think not only rings true today, but I think would have a very different perspective if that moment could have been transported to 2016. I mean, I think it was such a poignant, important moment to see the journey not only of Malcolm X, but to see the journey of an observer, of a documentarian, of a journalist, and realizing how fragile time is and how he could no longer not devote some time and energy into propelling that story even after he passed. So I hear that this is the final season of Cinema Project. You know, inquiring minds would like to know why.
Yeah, they do want to know why. So this is the final season of Cinema Project. We're not going away 100% completely, but we're just stopping that production schedule of... Because usually we do about 10 to 14 screenings per year, and we are what we like to call unpaid professional staff. So, you know, some things just aren't meant to last forever. And, you know, at the risk of sounding cliched, Portland is changing, and the model that we have been working with for, you know, the past 13 years just doesn't seem like it's necessarily fitting in with how Portland audiences, spaces for artists, things like that are changing right now. But I would say that we're also ready, you know. We're people with lives, and while we love experimental cinema and there is a fear that, well, what if we don't do it? I hope somebody else does. But it's time for us to maybe figure out a different model, or, I mean, really, it's time for us to take a break.
Right. If you don't mind me asking, so two-part question. One, can you tell us about some what other events are happening throughout the rest of your tenure or the rest of your lifespan? But before you get to that, can you please describe for people the event that happened at Pikus TBA this year? I got to see it. I don't know if there are many people in our audience got to see it, but it was incredible. And I was wondering, how did that event fit into the current model, or maybe might be part of a future model?
That's nothing like we have ever done before. We just had this idea that we would like to see all of our projectors, even ones that were half broken, running at once. And so we worked on this performance with a musician, Matt Carlson, and we had 11 projectors running. Some of them were mic'd, which was my favorite part of it, to hear when I dropped a slide in and then slid it over. It would make this amazing metallic slap. And a Super 8 projector was also contact mic'd, so you could hear it running. We just really wanted to... People are very interested in film. Right now, we have always seen it as a medium and tried to project it carefully and professionally, but we wanted to kind of mess around. And it's funny that at screenings in the last couple of years, I see people taking pictures of the projectors, which I never saw before.
Nice.
So we just wanted to, I think, have some fun and break some things and not be as careful.
Yeah, it was also a lot of fun to create loops with 16mm film and Super 8 film, and also to sort of inaugurate the new space that the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art has right now. And we really couldn't have done that event without them, because they literally built us a sort of scaffolding, kind of like a little tower for us to to hang from the ceiling, people to mound, have it be sort of that sort of wrap.
Oh, no, very much of a site means at different levels and different distances from the ceiling. You actually had images overlapping with each other. And everybody that I saw there still was in a bit of rapt revelry of, even though they might not have been sitting on the same plane looking at the same screen. It was an amazing event, and I just wanted to make sure that, even though we may never see that again, ever, I wanted to make sure that hopefully some description was captured in this digital medium so people might hear about it. So what else, so what's coming up next? I mean, or maybe not immediately next, but what's left on the plate or the menu, so to speak?
So one of our next screenings, actually the one that's coming up next this month, I'm really excited about it. It is called Passages, and it's guest curated by a curator named David Dinell. He's the former head programmer for the Ann Arbor Film Festival. He did that for many years. And for people who don't know, the Ann Arbor Film Festival has really been a place for contemporary avant-garde and experimental filmmakers to convene and show their work. So we're really excited to have him. He has put together two nights of films for us. Some will be double projector performances, so that's two 16mm projectors running at the same time. There's also some new digital work that he'll be showing, and a lot of the stuff that we haven't seen before, so it's also a treat for us to have somebody come in and bring a different voice with their sort of curatorial style.
And when will that be happening and where?
That's important. So Passages, guest curated by David Dinell, is going to be November 16th and 17th. And that will be on the 1300 block of Southeast MLK. And it's at 7:30 p.m. and David's going to be there, and he'll be able to talk about his the films that he selected for us and his practice as a film curator.
Great. And I'm assuming that everyone, I'll have links to this information on our show page so you can follow up. And I'll probably put something on Facebook at some point eventually as well. So my last question for Cinema Project is, what was the question that you feel Cinema Project was seeking to answer? Or what is the question that it's still answering today?
I think for me, it's about, and I think this is also true for the founders of Cinema Project, it's kind of selfish that, you know, there's things that we want to see, and the only way for us to see them is by bringing them to Portland. I'm not sure if that's answering your question, though.
I think it is.
I would say for me, I have a question, and it's what is at work in a dark room with a group of people? What's happening there, and what makes that different from watching something on your computer at home?
Right. Okay, well, I can't thank you both enough for joining us, Heather and Mia. Thank you so much for coming. Well, we're running out of time, so I'm going to jump right to my closing. You can find photos, links, as well as all the guest information on our show page. That's at KBOO.FM/ArtFocus. Please follow the link to Facebook and like KBOO Art Focus there as well. If you missed any part of today's show, there will be a podcast of the show online sometime later today. It's my goal to meet and introduce the listeners of KBOO to a broad spectrum of regional artists. If you're a visual artist in any medium, I'd love to have you or your organization on the show. It's also my goal to share information relevant to artists, like grant opportunities or shows. When I learn about residencies, grant deadlines, call for artists, you'll hear about them on this show as well as on our Facebook page. Well, we're going out to the sounds of Higher Plane by Danny Skrilla from Portland's own Zam Zam Sounds. Thanks again for joining us on Art Focus, only on KBOO Radio Portland, Oregon.
Does your employer have a matching gifts program? Many companies offer a dollar-for-dollar matching charitable contribution for donations you make to KBOO. The impact of your gift may be doubled or possibly tripled. Participating companies also match gifts made by retirees and/or spouses. Matching gifts are a great way for you to maximize your membership dollars. Check with your company's human resources or accounting departments to find out if your employer matches charitable contributions. Then request a matching gift form. For more information on companies making matching gifts, go to kboo.fm/employer.